I am unashamed. What about you?
So, Jace, I hear this. So, we're talking about today we're getting to the burial of Jesus and the resurrection. Mm-hmm. But Stone's telling me something. I just got a glimpse of a story that I haven't heard, so I'm hearing it for the first time.
I haven't told this story because Stone was like, don't tell that story. I mean, it's too disturbing. And I was like, what? This is real life.
Yeah.
So I'm coming down duck hunting, and I've often said many times I've told various stories that you see things in between the hours of 3:30 and 5 a.m. that really shows a reflection of the status of life.
Yep.
And a lot of it is troubling.
I look at our culture.
Our culture at that morning, time of the morning, there are some disturbing signs.
Because it's actually, you know what it's like, Jace? It's like, because when I, at 10:30, you go to Chick-fil-A and it's a changing of the guard. They've had breakfast up till 10:30, and then at 10:30, there's like a magic thing that gets, you know, switch that gets flipped, and then we go to spicy chicken sandwiches, which is good for y'all. So it's kind of like that. In the middle of the night, or in the early morning hours for y'all, it's the magic going out. But for other people, they've been up to things that are now coming to an end.
Let me lay off.
He's talking about traveling roads that were just dirt a few years back.
That's right.
But now they're pavement, but they're still in the...
I was a young lad learning how to drive, I started the Tokyo Drift. Out here on these roads, it was the redneck.
Well,
drift.
Let me just say, for those who've been living under a bridge or whatever, Phil lives in a very remote place on the globe. This is really remote.
Yeah, because it's all timber land coming out here, so there's nobody lives out
Phil
here.
Phil actually quoted something on our little duck show that we used to be a part of. That people thought, boy, I wonder who wrote that. You know, they didn't realize that everything we were saying, unfortunately or fortunately, based on your view of our show, was literally said off the top of our heads. But Phil famously said, where I'm at, I am 911. And people thought, boy, what a line. No, that was true. I mean, people, because Phil is a person of character, and There are some people.
And it's true. Like, our neighbor's house caught on fire one time. It was terrible. We all we could do is stand there and watch it burn because the fire department wasn't going to get here before it burned down.
By the time they get here, whatever was going to happen probably happened.
It's probably already happened.
So I will read this just because, since Stone was nervous about me sharing this story, what happened to him. You know, in 1 Thessalonians 5:4, which actually goes in with what we're talking about. This is right after 4:13, where he said, you know, how is this going down with the people that were dead and the people that were alive when Jesus comes back? And he says, we believe Jesus died and was buried and raised again. And so we believe that God will bring with Jesus those who have fallen asleep in him. You know, we're talking resurrection here.
Yeah.
Well, he gets to 1 Thessalonians 5, because he knows what everybody's thinking. Well, when is this going to happen? When? Because if you knew, well, then you get yourself ready.
Well, and also the context of the Thessalonians, they thought it was so imminent that they were selling all their stuff,
quit
working, because he has to say, hey, wait a minute, whoa, you know, just keep going about your life here. You know, this may be a little while for you.
And so then he goes on to say in chapter 5:2, this will come like a thief in the night, which means that whenever people say, whenever they predict the world's going to end,
wrong.
We know that's not true. But I want to just take a little side point about the story I'm going to share, because he says in 1 Thessalonians 5:4, which is one of my favorite verses in the Bible, that we, as followers of Jesus, should not be surprised when this happens. Which, when you carry that through your mind, we're ready.
Yep.
We don't want to see Jesus come back and say, oh my goodness, what is happening? This is shocking. No, this is something we depend
on. Who in the world is that?
Yeah, you don't want to be surprised. And then he makes this illustration, which is going to be to the point, the foundation for my story. It says, so then, verse 6, let us not be like others who are asleep, but let us be alert and self-control. Now, that alert is going to be a key theme to the story I'm about to tell.
Well, I'm intrigued. I've never heard a setup quite like Boy, this.
Well, building it, building this up.
And I'm going to keep building because verse 7 says, for those who sleep at night, and those who get drunk at night. Well, what about when there's a combination of those two things and thinking about alert? So, I'll get to the story. I'm driving down. It's 4:45 a.m., just like I do every other day of duck season for 60 days.
You could say this, where you were, is in the middle of nowhere.
That's why I led with that.
Yep.
I am literally in a place where there is nothing. There are trees, and there are trees that just got cut. So we have a cut over, and we have trees. They're fixing to be cut, or they just got cut. In between bridges, canals, creeks, swamps, woods, and a lot of critters.
A lot of critters. Which puts you more on alert, by the way.
And it's an eight.
When I drive out here, I'm on alert because something may dart out of the woods.
I've hit multiple deer. I hit a hoot owl once. I mean, he hit me. I didn't hit him. So don't say, oh, Jace broke the law. He hit a hoot owl. No, it literally flew into my windshield.
Yeah. And I had one hit the window. Like, I had my window down and hit the thing and then just came in and clawed my leg on the way by.
So there's an 8 mile stretch when you head to my dad's that is filled with carcasses and vultures.
Yep.
That are ready to, you know, it's like you're seeing the food chain and the cleanup all at one
time. We call it carcass lane because the rednecks like to throw out their deer carcasses.
So I'm in the middle of that area. And I get a phone call at 4:45, which is unusual because most people are sleeping. Well, it's Stone. And he says, I'm going to give you, and I quote, I say, yeah, because I'm wondering, I'm thinking he's overslept and he's going to be late because that's really the only time you get that call. But he said, I say, yeah. He says, watch out for that body in the middle of the road. I said, so what would you say to that?
I said, come again.
Well, you would say, come again. I said, and I said it frustratingly because I didn't know what that meant.
Yeah.
So I said, what kind of body? I said it like that. And he said, in this manner of speaking, human. So I just hung up. Because I thought,
watch out for that
watch
body.
Watch out for the human body.
30,
and Jason's the body.
I hung up. So 30 seconds later, because now I'm looking in the road, which he didn't know where I was at. And I didn't know where he was at. But now I'm almost
most people
here.
Would have had that conversation.
I know. I mean, I probably should have. But how do you explain in that stretch? Because up until this point, I haven't seen a body in the road. I would have remembered that. So I'm almost here. I mean, within a few miles.
Yeah.
So I start looking. 30 seconds, I see something in the road. Big. And I thought, well, that can't be a human body. That's too big. And it was in the middle of the road, as in I'm slowing down or because I would have hit this, whatever this is.
And this is not a standing body.
No. And so as I slow down, I thought, huh. There's a human laying in the road, across the road, head where the lines would be in the middle, feet on
probably
on
better
the side.
Said a human lying in the road.
Lying in the road, my bad. So
for our vocabulary lesson, just today.
English major. I know. I'm caught up in the hysteria of what happened. So I ease around the body in the road because I didn't, it was a human. I was, and at that moment, I felt compassion. I thought this body was dead because it was face down in the asphalt with kind of arms outstretched. So I called Stone back because I was going to say, I'm fixing to see if this body is alive. But as I'm pushing the dial, I see the truck coming and I'm looking, I'm like, oh, because it's hard to turn around there.
Yeah.
There's nowhere to turn around. So he said, watch out for the body, and he had to find a place to turn around. He's coming back. So I was like, perfect. So he come up beside me, and he's like, what do you think? And I said, I don't know. So he called 911. And he so now he's on the phone with 911. And I hear him now, because now I've just turned around in the ditch, and we're both got our headlights on this human body. Well, I was—
And you're thinking he's dead.
I mean, Al, I'm like 99% sure he looked dead.
Okay.
I mean, who would do this? Because there's no civilization.
And there was anywhere. No vehicle.
There's no anywhere. House. There's no and I'm looking at all this. With, I got a spotlight that I use for duck hunting. And I'm, because I'm looking in the bushes thinking, this I've seen enough movies oh, yeah. to think, okay.
This when is the are beginning the, of a horror movie.
Yeah. I mean, I have located my pistol. I haven't drawn it, but I know where it's at. And because I thought it could be people in the bushes saying, oh, I'm hurt. And then you get out. I mean, we've seen those. I mean, that was in the back of my mind, but I'm thinking somebody has either dumped this body or hit this body. But as I'm.
And by the way, it's on Carcass Lane? Is it on that side?
No, oh, but okay. it's in the general vicinity. Okay. And so, but I started assessing the situation as he's talking. And I'm like, there's nobody in the woods that, because I lit them up with a spotlight. There's nobody out here. I see no blood. Now I see no movement, but I see no blood.
Yeah.
And I looked at his feet. He was bare feet and he had pajama pants on and just like a regular shirt, but the pajama pants were kind of pulled down a little bit. And so it's like you see his midsection was just exposed.
Yeah.
Which was troubling, but I thought there's no blood. I see no wound. And then his feet looked real dirty, as in he'd been walking on the road. And I thought, maybe he just collapsed. So then it hit me to do what I should have done first. I went, hey, I hollered. I mean loud. Well, when I hollered, Jay went, there's movement, because he kind of moved his head. And Jay's like talking to 911. He's alive. And then I heard Jay say, but he's not looking real good. And that's what I was thinking. So then the guy puts his arms behind him, because you got to remember, we're up on pretty close to him with our headlight. I noticed this position. Yeah, it's the handcuff position. I said, he thinks we're the law. So that made me think he's probably been up to no good. Because, I mean,
it's possible in this particular scenario.
I mean, I'll just put myself in this situation. If I've decided to take a rest in the middle of the road, asphalt, my first inclination.
You need to be over in the tree line in the ditch.
It's not funny. This is not funny, but well, I know everybody lived. Now that he's alive, we can laugh.
We can laugh about
it. But my first inclination, if somebody hollered at me, would not be to assume the handcuff position. That just wouldn't happen.
That gave you a little information on where this possibly could start.
That's what I thought. So then I thought, okay, we have either drunkenness, drugs, or mental problems.
Yep.
One of those three things, I don't know what else we could have here. And so I said that, and Jay was relaying that
to the 911.
Yeah. You know, is there movement? Yeah. Is he coherent? No, he's not coherent. He tried to lift his head. So then it got into the back and forth of, you know, what's he doing? Do you feel safe? And Jay
Stone
was like,
said they told him to wait right there. And he said, look, I got decoys to put out.
No. Here's what happened. Stone said, do you want us to wait till you get here? And they said, we don't care what you do. We're coming. So I think they thought, because you say that, Jay said, well, that seemed a little, you know, impolite of me. And I was like, well, no, they're thinking, what? There's nobody out there. Except y'all are going duck hunting in this fella. So,
when the other thing
luckily
is,
for us,
hang on, let's take a break. So, of course, preachers like New Year's because it gives you a chance to kind of help people reset. Like, you know, you need to think about this. A lot of times we always start a new series around the first of the year because people sometimes they'll say, you know what, I'm going to give church a try, or I'm going to give God a try or whatever. So, we like this time of year, but a lot of times for people, it comes out of a depressing time because they got problems in their relationships and all this. And so one of the things that I like to do is, and I agree with Dad, you have to put Christ first. But sometimes, you know, sin gets in the way and people have a lot of problems.
Bill is right, because Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
Whatever year it is.
Whatever day it is.
I like it. So one of the our sponsors is a group called Faithful Counseling. And I really love what they're doing, because I'm a firm believer in counseling. We have done a lot of counseling, but we're not trained counselors. And these people are. They're licensed therapists. They have over 3,000. They're spread across all 50 states. You can go by text or chat or phone or video. So there's a lot of different ways to connect with these folks. And sometimes you can't find a good counselor in your area, which I understand. So if you're having some problems, relationships or, you know, internal issues, give these guys a shot. I think they may help you. It's faithfulcounseling.com/unashamed. You're going to get 10% off your first month of counseling. So go to faithfulcounseling.com/unashamed. You're going to fill out a questionnaire. They're going to assess your needs. They're going to match you with a counselor that can help you. He could also turn violent. Then you'd have to do something.
Well, I think that's what they were probably thinking. Because right. I'm like, it was,
I mean,
a big
you don't
guy.
Want to have to do something to this person either.
Yeah, which I was never.
You
I
never
mean,
felt
my
threatened.
First thing was not going to be pull out my pistol
right.
unless a bunch of people bum rushed the vehicle.
Right.
My if he got up and went zombie apocalypse, I would just hook it in reverse. I can outrun a man in his condition in my truck. And so they said, we're on the way. Long story short, you know, ambulance comes. He never looked like, oh, I fell asleep in the middle of the road. So he had a bad night. But I was telling Stone, I was like, no, the reason you tell this story is if you have a drinking problem or a drug problem, you don't want to end up in asphalt sleeping where there's just all these critters that most of the time when they see a body laying in the road, they're like, here we go. Because I was thinking more
especially
like that.
Especially in this area, yeah.
I mean, yeah. We got bobcats over there in the ditch saying, what do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so, I mean, that's where it leads. But I thought to myself, this could be the bottom. Sure, we could have just kept going, you know, but I mean, I'm like, here, this human being here.
Yeah.
We got to stop our life, and maybe this will be, you know, a point where they can get their act together.
Some sort of.
Because it seemed kind of in the now. How I'm just guessing, but if you're laying out in the middle, literally the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the road, and there's people driving by, there's some changes that need to be made.
It's a dangerous spot.
Yeah.
To lie down.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, that's the old Good Samaritan story. I mean, he was really fortunate that y'all were the ones, because there's some people driving around out here at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Next car could have hit him.
It would have hit him because they'd have been high on meth or something. And we know there's a lot of that going on too. So yeah. He's fortunate it was you and Stone that found him and to be alive.
Yeah, exactly.
You talk about
so it
killed.
Was a happy ending, because the person, you know, the last time we heard is, okay, at least he's going to get checked out. And because that's what I'm saying. I've heard a lot of people get up and give their testimonies or whatever. And there was a story like this that was in there, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
So I always remember that Trent Langhoff, one of my good friends who's now out at Colorado Christian University. I mean, he's so educated and he's so articulate and he loves Jesus and he has a beautiful family. At one time he was homeless in New Orleans and had a drug overdose that put him in a hospital.
Yep.
I mean, but he fell out and he was lying in a road down in New Orleans, which is the only thing worse that I could think than being out in this cutover.
That's right.
But here you look at him now. So I thought, you know, I think it's worth telling just to say, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that's going on.
That's right.
Mostly at night. I mean, that's why that 1 Thessalonians 5 that said that. It said those who get drunk, they get drunk at night. And this was, we were just seeing the end of a pretty rough night.
Yeah. I mean, because he had to have walked miles
to get wherever he
to
came
get to
from,
this spot,
which is why I said when I saw his feet I was like, he'd been walking a ways.
Yeah.
And wasn't real sure where he was headed or where he was going, and just so yeah, that happened. But it also made me, you know, realize that story. I thought of that parable myself. Yep. I was like, once we knew he was okay, I mean, then it kind of became a little humorous, but it really not funny. No. I mean, this is a human being, and we all...
It's really sad.
Yeah, it's sad.
It's a sad story. But hopefully, you're right, it'll have a good ending if this person realizes it, you know, how sad his life really is. But to the story, to the Good Samaritan story, the person in the story, because this was a guy that was nobody wanted to deal with either, and Jesus' point is the people that walked by were people that should have been, they were followers of God. They should have been willing to check on this guy, but because he wasn't on their status level, they just walked on by. And that was his point, was the idea is that every person is important.
If you look nationwide, there's a lot of people that walk on by.
Oh, that's exactly right.
Walk on by.
That's exactly right. Don't care about anybody.
But he's in the road. We don't know whether he's dead or alive. You say, hey, I ain't got time to fool with that.
That's right. I'm in a hurry or I'm in a whatever.
Dangerous.
Well, and even, you know, like I said, the police, I mean, their position on it has to be, you can do what you want, because if they tell you to stay and then he attacks you, well, then it's going to come back on them.
That's right.
And I thought it was just an interesting bit of dialogue there. I was thinking, I mean, this guy's laying in the middle of the road. He needs some help. There's nobody out here. There's no houses. There's no, he needs some help.
Yeah, that was the saddest part of the story to me, is that him winding up there.
But it made me realize how important, you know, Jesus is in somebody's life, that you have some kind of moral compass to make better decisions. But you also have people who, I mean, all of the things that Jesus did, which was awesome. I mean, we're amazed at his arguments and the things he said and all the sermons that he had, but he also just had a heart for every person. And what he got with that was having a bad reputation among religious people and the government, because he would have a meal with anybody and help anybody and touch anybody. And so, but God knows that those are the moments where transformation can happen. And that's the greatest gift on earth that you can see, is somebody go from laying in the street. So I wanted to share that. Just who knows, one day you may hear this podcast.
That's right. If you hear the podcast, you'll know, you'll remember what happened.
Yeah, there's a New Year's resolution.
He probably does not remember you or Stone or anybody else. Probably.
No.
Yeah, he probably the whole night's gone now.
Yep.
I pray that he turns his life around. So to your point, Jason, last time we talked about Jesus on the cross, and there were a couple of things I wanted to mention that we didn't talk about because I found them interesting. But in those statements he made, he's dying for the sins of the world. But he looked at his mother. He was concerned for her. He looked at the people that were killing him. He said, forgive them. He looked at the thief and said, you know, he gave him comfort, you know, and he had just been insulting him, you know, 5 minutes earlier. So to your point, Jesus always had that compassionate look at people, even the people that, from our perspective, didn't deserve it. Last time I didn't mention this in Matthew 27, the moment in verse 51 when Jesus dies, and it says he gave up his spirit. And then on one of the other ones, he says, into your hands I commit my spirit. The temple curtain tears in two from top to bottom.
Yeah.
And then there's also an earthquake that happens. And remember, you've had this, there's been an eclipse, a divine eclipse. 3 hours they've been in dark.
Would your thought process be that was God leaving there?
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, that's why I want to bring it up, because a lot of people say, what does that mean? The temple curtain tears that. But so I want to set that scenario, because that was a huge thing that happened. Because the way the temple set up, you had the interior little room called the Holy of Holies. And the high priest would go in there once a year to make a sacrifice for the people.
Sprinkle a little blood.
Sprinkle some blood. A spotless lamb would be sacrificed. And then he worked in the outer part of that called the Holy Place. It wasn't the Holy of Holies, the Holy Place. And there was a temple curtain that separated the two. And the thing was, anybody else, you walk back in there, you just stroll in there, you die. And so when Jesus dies, that thing rips in two by divine power, meaning there's no more the sacrifice for sins that you've thought all this time, that's over.
Yep.
That just changed. So that was a huge thing that happened. For, you know, especially
and that's
the
a pretty
Jewish
good
mindset.
Basis for saying, in a relatively short period of time, this thing is coming down.
Right. I mean,
that's pretty well the coming of it leaving.
Right.
This not is, being there anymore.
Well, the shadow of temple worship versus Jesus worship. You know, a good book, a good letter that addresses that is Hebrews. And in Hebrews 13:12, after it gave the analogy in verse 11 about the high priest carrying the blood of animals into the most holy place as a sin offering, but the bodies are burned outside the camp, you know, which would be their way of worship, just to push their sins forward, you know, right. another year. And we know Jesus did it once and for all. He says that in Hebrews 9. But in verse 12, it says, and so Jesus also suffered outside the city gate to make the people holy through his own blood. Let us then go to him outside the camp, bearing the disgrace he bore. For here we don't have an enduring city, but we are looking to the city that is to come. But it made me think about this fella in the road. You know, we call 911 when we, I don't know who initiated the thought, but when we say when somebody's a danger to himself or others, well, you call 911. Even humanity recognizes you've become a danger to yourself or others. You're right. In the middle of a highway. But when you think about what Jesus offers and that he loves everyone, I mean, we're all dangerous to ourselves and others outside of him, looking at it from an eternal perspective.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have the way, the means, the wisdom to solve your problems. It's just not there, which is why Jesus did what he did.
Right. I agree. Let's take another break. So one of my favorite new sponsors we have is a group called 40 Days for Life. And as y'all know, Lisa and I are super heavily involved in the pro-life movement. Part of it's because of our own testimony and Lisa's story, but we've just met some amazing people. And as Jace has mentioned before, to fight for the life of the unborn, I can't think of a better fight, you know, because who's there to fight for them, right?
Just as a human.
Yeah, because you're not even safe in your mother's womb. So they've written a new book. It's called What to Say When, The Complete New Guide to Discussing Abortion, because a lot of people find themselves being pro-life, but they're not sure how to defend, because these people come in with these arguments. They come up with these fancy ways to put it, but it's just killing babies, but they've got all the terminology. So these guys have written a great book. They've done work, and they're now in over 1,000 cities in 65 countries. They hold peace vigils, sometimes outside of abortion facilities. They've helped 221 abortion workers leave not only that, but also come to know Christ, which is pretty incredible. So there's a great group. I love them. What to Say When, The Complete New Guide to Discussing Abortion, How to Change Minds and Convert Hearts in a Brave New World. So check them out. They're on Amazon, or you can go directly to 40daysforlife.com. So it's 40daysforlife.com. Go to Amazon, buy the book, and get in the fray. And then something else happens that I wanted to mention. I want to mention that just because people I know will wonder what that was up with the temple. But also this earthquake happens. The earth shook, it says, in 51. The rocks split, tombs broke open, and the bodies of many holy people who had died were raised to life. They came out of the tombs, and after Jesus' resurrection, so that's still going to be, you know, a couple of days away, they went into the city and appeared to many people. Now that's a weird. I mean, what a weird
really
happening
know.
That is.
What, yeah,
what
I don't
was,
really
what
know
that?
What that means. I mean, it, part of me, the fact that it says after Jesus' resurrection, well, then you think maybe they got their glorified body there, which was not unprecedented, because you'd had the transfiguration occur in 17, and the two. You had a dispute about Moses' body on where it was buried, posted by the evil one. He was like, where's his body? And then you had
Elijah.
Elijah who didn't die. He just took off. And there's other guys mentioned.
Yeah, there's one in
Enoch.
Yeah, in Genesis.
I'm here in Hebrews. What did it say about Enoch? By faith, Enoch was taken from this life so that he did not experience death. He could not be found because God had taken him away before he was taken.
So there were a few pre this happening that didn't experience death like most people do. So
And then you have that weird passage in 1 Peter 3 when he was talking about when Jesus would come back, and it says that Jesus went and shared to those. Should I just read it? It said, let's see. 1 Peter 3, it says in verse 18, Christ died for sins once for all. So this is the same time frame. The righteous for the unrighteous to bring you to God. He was put to death in the body, but made alive by the Spirit, through whom also he went and preached to the spirits in prison who disobeyed long ago when God waited patiently in the days of Noah. I think the timing is right for that, because some were resurrected and
impossible.
I mean, I didn't read that out of a book somewhere. I read that, and I've read where.
Well, that's why I wanted to bring it up, because it's just
their tombs.
It's intriguing. I mean, they either were like Lazarus, who they were raised and then they died again, or they were like Jason's describing. They were actually glorified and then I guess left. They're not still here, so they didn't stay. If they were raised, glorified.
I mean, if you read all the passages that talk about that, you remember Paul's vision that seems to be about himself.
Right.
In Corinthians, where he knew a guy that was called up to the third heaven, and he saw things that that we can't speak of. Mm-hmm. And when you put all those together, what you conclude is we don't know outside of the physical world and our senses.
Right.
What the heck's going on? Anybody who claims they do is probably making money reading people's palms or whatever. And I'm not saying there's not something to that, because there seems to be, since the beginning of time, the idea of witchcraft and demon possessions and voodoo and all that kind of spiritual world. But based on what I read, this doesn't make me scared at all. I just know that Jesus has the power to raise dead bodies, and people that were dead, he can bring them back to life in a real meaningful way. And it, you know, in Acts 1, it says Jesus himself. And most of these other things that you see, nothing's ever proven.
Right.
It's like I hear a voice, you know, it's telling me, but it's most of the stuff you hear on the psychic hotline and all is something that a pretty good con man could pull off. Not saying that it's not happening, but.
Well, there's a big difference in resurrecting people and my grilled cheese sandwich look like Jesus, you know?
Well, right.
I mean, yeah.
Or a cloud. I've seen people do that. You know, they send you an email and there's a cloud and they're like, look, see? And it's like the cloud is the shape of like the gospel diagram.
Right.
It's like trying to tell us something. I'm like, well, he already did tell us something in black and white and red in the Bible.
But so, like you, like all of us, I hear things that I think, well, I don't know about that. But I know because I read passages like this that anything is possible. I mean, God could decide to do whatever he wants to do. If he wants to bring people back to life and then they die again.
I think as humans, people try to come up with something extra that's not in here. But there's nothing extra that you're going to come up with that God didn't solve.
Yeah.
When he says he took care of, you know, all of the issues, there's nothing. If you live forever with God, what else is there?
That's right.
If you have all your sins removed and you're resurrected and you're going to live forever with a forever family, what else does he need to tell you?
That's pretty well covered.
I mean, that's the basis for everything, right? You're exactly right. So, and we get to 57 and in Matthew 27. And so Jesus has died. All the prophecies have been fulfilled, you know, that because his legs weren't broken where the other thieves were, which, by the way, the reason they did that is because when you crucify someone, you don't really kill them by the nails and all that. They asphyxiate. They can't breathe. So that's how they die. So what they would do when they got ready to be done with them, if they're still alive, they'd break their legs where they couldn't push up and get a breath.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, so they went out to do that because they want to wrap this thing up, but Jesus was already dead. So that, of course, you remember this, you know, one of them stuck a spear in his side and said, just, you know, water and blood flowed out of it. And so Jesus was already dead in this moment. So they take
I was just going to say one thing before we moved on from that. I mean, because the physical world was kind of turned upside down. I mean, in that you had the curtain being ripped and you had the earthquake. But I did want to say about all that while this is going on, that the spiritual world was turned upside down too.
That's right.
We just are not privy to what's going on. And look, there's tons of great ideas on what this does mean out there in religious land as far as different opinions and scholars. But I just think that, what about all the people who were dead, all these spirits? Because to God, all are alive. We read that in the analogy when they said, what if the woman is married seven times? Remember, he got down and he said, to God, all are alive. So that whole world was turned upside down in a positive because of Jesus's death, burial, and resurrection. So why is it shocking that some were resurrected at that point? I mean, we don't know what God was thinking, right, 2000 years ago, because he's not bound by time, but no matter what you come up with, it's exciting.
Yeah. And you're right. The spiritual forces, both good and evil, I mean, this was like the biggest theater going in this moment, because here was Jesus.
Well,
and,
exactly.
I mean,
I'll give you another question now.
Let's take a break, dude. So a lot of times I've noticed people like to complain about government or about things they don't like. Because, of course, right now we've got vaccine mandates, critical race theory, all these things about the government and their issues, but they don't really do much about it. And so there's a group, one of our sponsors is a group called Convention of States, and they have an opportunity for you to do something. They rightly say that Congress or the presidency, Joe Biden, they're never going to limit their own power. They're only going to try to grab more. And so what they've done is they've started a movement, and it's called Convention of States, and it's supported by Glenn Beck, Ron DeSantis, Mark Levin, people we've heard of. It's being led by a man named Mark Meckler. And so what they're asking you to do is go to conventionofstates.com/fill, and they have a petition there that basically gets state legislatures to change their own state constitutions, which, of course, can change federal power. So they're saying there is a way to do something. You got to put more power in the states, and that's what their movement is about. So visit, if you're interested in checking these guys out, visit conventionofstates.com/fill, sign the petition, conventionofstates.com/fill, to put power back to the states.
Why were these demon-possessed guys hanging around in a graveyard?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's a couple of stories where they were chained. One of them, they had him chained in a cave at a cemetery. Well, that I don't even need to know the story to realize there's something about dead spirits and demon possession and a connection there when you have multiple stories about people acting crazy in a cemetery and having to be confined. I mean, and then here's Jesus having the power to do that.
Plus, how many times over the course of the four Gospels is for three straight years, every time Jesus goes into a new village, you know, it says he healed people, he cast out demons. So, I mean, there was so much demonic activity going on, to your point. Every city he went into, he's casting this one out. In fact, we talked about the Marys.
You could find it in every city today.
Correct.
That's why I don't knock these different nationalities' view of death. You know, some, like in the Native American world, you know, there's certain things and certain rituals were meant for the death. And, you know, you have these, there's not a Western that goes by that you don't, you know, they wouldn't even walk through the burial ground with all this.
Yeah.
Well, that's real. I mean, that's coming from a place of, we realize that just because your body's dead, it's not over.
That's right.
And Jesus is the only one who had the power to address that world. And I think that gives me comfort to know that I don't know how many people there have been on the earth since the beginning of time, but it's a big number. And when I die, we tend to, as humans, think, well, nobody's going to remember me, or I'm lost, or based on what I'm reading, God is fully aware of every person, dead or alive.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And you think about it, Jess, a movie, how many movies have been made about this idea about people coming back? Remember Poltergeist? It was a big hit because they had built this subdivision on top of an old Indian burial ground, so they sucked the little girl in through the TV. Remember? And then that's kind of coming out of the ground, and, you know, of course, there's casting out.
You remember Eastwood, you know, he rode into town, and he made them all. He took all the people that were insignificant and put them in charge and painted the whole town red. And put hell on it. And then they had a big gunfight, and all the people with bad hearts got killed. And then he rode off and disappeared. You know, he came back from the dead. The whole movie, that's what it was about.
Spirit of the old guy they had killed, and he came back as a bad dude.
Because we all have a sense of there's something going on here. And you didn't have to read the Bible to get that sense. It's just the nature of being a human. And where did all of this come from in each and every different culture? They all have their certain thoughts on it. But I'll tell you this, of all the stuff I've read, seen, and respect other people's view of it, I like what the Bible tells me about how Jesus viewed it the best. I mean, if you just look at this as a story, to me, this makes the most sense.
It does.
No doubt.
And I think about that movie, Jace, the name of that was so whoever come up with that, High Plains Drifter.
Yeah.
The idea is we don't know who this guy is, but he's coming from some higher plane somewhere. When he rolled into Seaside.
Yeah, that last tombstone, when they rode by, it was that guy that they had horse whipped to death.
Yeah, that's
right. Up there in the street.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was actually him. He just came back.
Yep.
He just came back and made things right. That's pretty good. So in verse 57, they take his body down, and there's a guy, Joseph of Arimathea. And if you read all the other gospels, you kind of put all the puzzle together on who he was. He was a member of the high council, which meant he was a part of the Sanhedrin. But then one of the books says that, of course, he didn't agree with what they did because secretly he was a follower of Jesus. And so he went to Pilate. He asked for Jesus' body. Pilate says it can be given to him. Joseph took the body, wrapped it in a clean linen cloth, placed it in his own new tomb, because he was a rich man, that he had cut out of the rock. He rolled a big stone in front of the entrance, and there were the Marys. And then we know from John 18 that Nicodemus was with Joseph of Arimathea, and he was, remember, the Pharisee that Jesus had talked
really
to.
Which is really an awesome transformation, talking about transformation of someone's life. It didn't share how it happened. He meets Jesus at night in the early chapters of John in chapter 3, and now here he is trying to take care of Jesus's body in the end, which would be embarrassing for him.
Well, I mean, it's against the law. I mean, like, in his position, you wouldn't go anywhere near a dead body.
No.
I mean, that makes you unclean.
This guy.
Exactly.
Claiming to be the Son of God.
What I love about Jace is these two guys have been a part of the whole thing, but in their hearts, they've really come to faith in Jesus and who he says he was, and now they're coming out. Because when they did this, there's no going back. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they literally had to cross over to do what they did, and they're saying, you know, you don't read about them once you get to Acts, but I've always been curious as to what happened to them, you know, because that was a bold move.
I mean, I think they probably became warriors for Jesus.
I think so, too. They probably were martyred.
We, however, speak a message of wisdom among the mature, but not the wisdom of this age or the rulers of this age who are coming to nothing. No, we speak of God's secret wisdom, in the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus, which we're looking at, a wisdom that has been hidden No one had ever tried this before and got away with it, but Jesus did. It had been hidden, that God destined for our glory before time began, all this worked out in advance. None of the rulers of this age, I think it's the political people and the authorities and the people at the Sanhedrin, none of those people understood it, Jesus dying, being buried, and raised from the dead. For if they had, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. And he goes on to say, no eye has it written, no eye has seen, no ear has heard, no mind has conceived what God has prepared for those who love him. But God has revealed it to us by his Spirit, which is Jason's point, who wrote this down.
Right.
All the writers wrote what the Spirit, with the Spirit's help, to put down. Here's what you say about this. Here's what you say about that. On and on and on it goes, you know.
Right. Let's take our last break.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit FearlessArmyRollCall.com to secure your spot.
It's a pretty wild story.
It's wild. But you know, it's really interesting because only Matthew mentions this next section, and none of the other three gospels mention this, which I find fascinating because this was a pretty big deal. It says the next day, the one after preparation day, the chief priests and the Pharisees went to Pilate. So we're getting this little behind the scenes. Sir, they said, we remember that while he was still alive, that deceiver, which I thought that's the narrative they're painting now.
Yeah.
After 3 days, I will rise again. So they got that, right? I mean, they heard that. So give the order for the tomb to be made secure until the third day. Otherwise, his disciples may come and steal the body and tell the people that he's been raised from the dead. This last deception will be worse than the first. So Pilate says, take a guard, go make the tomb as secure as you know how, which I found that a funny phrase. It's almost like to me he's saying, good luck with that. But he says, as secure as you know how. So they went and made the tomb secure by putting a Roman seal on the stone, which meant if you went and messed with this thing, you were going against the Roman government.
Yeah.
So, but I find that fascinating because number one, they knew what he said, but they were so steeped in their disbelief that they still thought they could control the situation. And they thought, well, no, they're going to go steal. We're never going to be rid of this guy.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I thought if he really was who he said he was, you're not be able to keep him in the ground.
No.
I mean, you see what I'm saying?
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But it shows you how people are. They still thought they could control the narrative.
Yeah.
They've killed him, but that's not enough. Now we got to make sure he stays dead.
That's
and
right.
And then nobody claims he came back.
So they were a little shaky at best.
They were very shaky. And so, I find it fascinating. It's the same thing we talked about earlier, how governments work.
Somebody might have told them, hey, he pulled it off.
Right. Well, so when the angel shows up, there's another earthquake. An angel shows up, and the angel said he rolled the stone away.
Mm-hmm. Which and sat on it. I like it.
I do too. It's almost like, because you remember what Jesus said, I could call legions of angels.
But that's why
it only took one.
Yeah, that's why that Acts 1 mentions, when Luke wrote that, he makes sure that he said he spent 40 days convincing them that he was alive.
Right.
I mean, he just didn't hit the road. He made sure he appeared to one and another and this one and that one. And then he made the round.
It wasn't just word.
No.
Hey, I heard something.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, but, you remember,
you
too.
You know, showing him the scars. That's and right. His, you know.
Yeah, you get a lot of that. Road to Emmaus and Luke 24.
Oh, yeah.
Even when you read these stories, I mean, chapter 28, when the angel, it says he is not here in verse 6. He has risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. It always reminded me of when Nathanael was like trying to warm up to Jesus, and then they said he was from Nazareth, you know, in John 1,
mm-hmm.
and his brother said, well, just come and see. I mean, I think this is the same kind of thing here. I mean, when you bury a body back then and roll the rock where it's not intended to be.
That's right.
I mean, this is before dynamite. You know, it's over.
It's going to take a lot of people to roll that away, or one angel. But it says he looked like that. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. So this guy had the literal, I mean, he looked like lightning. You know, you've seen lightning flash. You have to close your eyes when it flashes. It's so bright. But that's what this guy looked like, this now sitting on the tomb. The guards were so afraid that they shook and became like dead men. So they went into some sort of a cosmic coma.
It was too much to bear.
That's right. So much for secure it as best as you know how.
Yeah.
Because, you know, all it takes is one angel to show up.
What did Doc Holliday say? They're just more than he could bear.
More than he could bear. But listen what happens, though. So the women are on their way. They've now seen him. Some of the guards went to the city, reported to the chief priests everything that had happened. So they went and told him that there was some guy or some being that looked like lightning, and they passed out, and this guy rolled the stone. They tell him what happened. You know they did. The chief priest met with the elders to devise a plan. What? The plan is over. I mean, the plan ought to be, we need to find out who this guy really is and follow him.
Well, they're like, that's why they came up with that. The body must be stolen, or
right.
Of course, the outreach did come when Peter, who had the keys to the kingdom given to him by Jesus, and he pretty well told him, "You, with the help of wicked men, you put him to death by nailing him to a cross. You were there. Y'all saw the miracles. And now, you know, he's both Lord and Savior. He's the Messiah." You know, and then they all were like, "Oh, whoa, wait a minute." They were cut to the heart. They said, what do we do?
Yeah.
Because they're hung there.
Right.
Well, that's the first time you see a turnaround of any of those people's minds.
Right.
It's when the Spirit came like a hurricane, and everybody's looking around like, what in the world is going on here? Right. And then Peter said, you're the guilty ones. You kill him.
We use the word, though. How wicked are these people? Because they know the truth.
Yep.
So they give the soldiers money, and they said, here's what you do. You are to say his disciples came during the night and stole him away while you were asleep. So they're just flat out lying to protect the thing. If this report gets to the governor, we'll satisfy him and keep you out of trouble. I thought, yeah, right. Just like they did Judas, right?
Yeah.
So the soldiers took the money, did as they were instructed, and this story has been widely circulated even to this very day, which is why I think Matthew puts it in his gospel. Because remember, he was the one warning the Jews.
Even our governor, way back when governor, what was the one, about the third one back?
D.W.E.?
Yeah. Him? Yeah, the one that was in prison. They put him
Edwards.
In, yeah, Edwards. He said he fainted.
Yeah.
He just fainted.
Yeah.
You know, after reading all this, he said, no, Jesus, he wasn't raised. He just fainted.
Yeah. He swooned.
Yeah, he swooned.
Of course, he had reasons to not want to believe in Jesus, because he also said the only way he would lose this election is if he was caught in bed with a dead girl or a live boy.
Yeah.
That's how wicked
EWE
was.
Yep.
By the way, he said that in a campaign, in
That's
public.
Disturbing.
It's very disturbing. But my point is, they're still devising the plan. I think Matthew puts it in his gospel because he's basically telling a Jewish audience, you got duped.
Yeah,
by these people. You know, he's giving them a warning because he knows Matthew 24, you know, this coming. AD 70 is coming. So, look, you got a few years to get this thing worked out. If you go by the story that the disciples stole him away when you know better, you're going to pay the price for it. I mean, I think that's what he said. And they did.
Well, from God's perspective, they hear this, all of his followers, and they're getting a plan. You know, he went ahead to Galilee. Oh, let's go. The women are running. You know, let's go tell everybody. And then all of a sudden, Jesus appears in verse 9 and says, greetings. I just think, you know, can you imagine?
One of them says, peace be with you. Yeah, like, okay, settle like, down, boys. Settle greetings. Down.
I mean, to us, to translate it be, howdy.
That's right. Settle down. Because, I mean, they talk about a ruckus.
They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshiped him. Because you can imagine they were just like, and I think then, all those times he said, I die, I'll be back in 3 days. All of a sudden, the dots are connecting.
Yeah.
Yep.
This is a being not from this place.
Right. We can't kill him. He won't. He'll die, but he's standing there talking 3 days later.
I mean, you're behind a locked door, and you look up, and he's in the room with you.
Yeah.
I mean, whoo.
But you wonder why all these men and women had such boldness from this point forward to their life.
Yep.
And would all, most of them, be killed.
They went to their death not even looking back.
Which I've said 100 times, you know, it's what's different than other movements and religions, because these people would have known that this was all just a joke.
Right.
But they all went to their deathbed in the name of Jesus, because they were like, we'd rather be dead than deny him. Because he's coming, he came back. This and it's is not a problem.
And it's almost like they didn't fear death anymore.
Oh, they did.
They thought we'll be resurrected.
Which, on that note, which is why we get to the Great Commission, and when Jesus said, because again, verse 17 is another worship. When they saw him, they worshiped him. But some doubted. And it's still happening today.
Oh, yeah.
And they saw it. And they still doubted. So when people say, I'm struggling with doubts, I'm like, yeah, tell me about it. Yeah. It happens. Life is tough.
That's right.
But Jesus took all the pressure off us and says, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. I mean, that doesn't leave any for us. Go make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I commanded you, which I would think this would be included.
I do this. I do this all the time for that very reason.
That's
and
it.
I'm with you.
I got
you.
My orders from headquarters right there.
Right there.
And I love the way the last sentence says, and I'm with you always. To the very end of the day, I'm here.
I'm here. Whatever age it is, we're here.
You say, I thought he left. No, he's here.
He's here. All right. We'll pick it up next time.
Pretty cool.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube, and be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.